in an area of not less than 100 acres. County's recommended that could be taken out, so you could look at 5 acres, half an acre, whatever, you know, whatever was pertinent. If there was a rock outcropping, which we seem to have used that a lot on this committee, they could use that, and it wouldn't have to be 100 acres on the soils test. That's Representative Pearson.
So what does this mean in Eastern Oregon, where we removed the 20 they're all on forest capability or marginal, aren't they? Now they have no acreage test, is that right? What does that do in Eastern Oregon?
Representative Priestley, in Eastern Oregon, when you have such large areas, it probably wouldn't do anything. But in the current bill, it has, if you want to use a soils test, okay, for designation of marginal lands, if you want to use a soils test, currently it says it has to be located, that class of soil has to be located in an area of not less than 100 acres. By deleting that portion, it would allow you to use, if there was a portion of your farm or there was an area sitting out there, there were 5 rotten acres. For example, in Westland, we happen to have where a glacier went and it's all rock. Very close to that is some very good soil. They would be able to use that small portion instead of 100 acres for determining that, the soil classification test.
So my question was way off, I guess. It shows I don't understand this too well. It's forest test, it isn't relevant enough. I mean, wouldn't affect Eastern Oregon?
No, all this would mean it wouldn't matter how big or how small, only the soil of that.
Need a few or forest. The confusing part, that slash means or.
It just means that the parcel under consideration would be considered not some area of marginal soil.
Yeah, only the parcel needs to be considered, not the whole area.
Proposed marginal land would be considered.
Can we go to amendment number 3? Does everybody understand that deletion of the 100 acres? I'd like to at least understand this before we go on.
I'll be right back, guys. I'm on it.
Madam Chair.
This next one is going to be a little more difficult to understand, I think. relating to divisions in marginal land, currently the bill says you can go down to 20 acres. This task force proposed amendment number 3 would allow you to go to 10 acres if you didn't abut the EFU land or the forest land. So it would leave it at 20 acres if you abutted an EFU or forest land to give you a buffer zone. The other thing it would allow, if an individual came in, or an individual an applicant initiated application, came in and said, I'd like my land designated marginal. And say, let's say they use the quarter mile perimeter test. And if everything in that area would have been designated marginal, then they can also go to 10 acres. Have I thoroughly confused everybody?
No. It's way too clear.
Madam Chair.
The representative.
Representative Troop is very concerned. You can go to 1 or 5 acres, but...
I don't believe. Proposed amendment number 4. Again, none of the 4 committee members that looked at this had any problem, and this was by the task force. And this was asked for by the counties. Currently in the bill, LCDC interprets the definition of hardship. This would allow, this is local control one, it would allow the counties to do their definition and look at it for hardship cases. You know, the mobile home on the family farm. I think you know about that, Representative Traynor, fairly well.
Yes. Madam Chair?
This would allow the county to allow that instead of the commission. Representative Troop.
Do the counties have their own definitions of hardship, or would this require them to make a definition of hardship?
Maybe Rush, you could answer that, since I believe you're the one that suggested this.
Representative Troop, Ron Eber indicated in the task force that most of the EFU zones that have been acknowledged by the commission have had a certain amount of baggage in the permitted uses section, or the conditional use section in this case, and that hardships are a very common occurrence in those acknowledged plans, and they, when they review them, they make sure that the county has adequate standards. And I know that in Marion County, the standards are very clear and precise to avoid abuses, which we've had problems with in the past.
Madam Chair, how does one go about, how would a county go about, what procedure would be required to change that definition after the plan has been acknowledged?
Those standards are in your implementing ordinance, your zoning ordinance, so you would have to go through the ordinance amendment process and notify LCDC of that change.
Okay. And then if LCDC or any other party that asked for that, those proposed changes objected, then you would initiate that process. That is something that is appealable to the commission, as long as someone again reacts to the change at the local level.
Correct.
Any further questions about that? Okay.
I have a question on three.
You have a question on three, okay.
Okay, under this language, marginal land on the inside of a marginal lands area would have a minimum 10-acre lot size. Rural residential, or the exceptions process, allows a smaller lot size.
Right.
The exceptions process can take place on marginal land.
The exception process can take place, and remember, you've opened wide open the lot of record on marginal land, too.
Right. So there will be a variety of sizes possible within marginal lands.
Yes.
Will the exceptions process take place on the edge of marginal lands, on the frontier?
Well, I would think the exceptions process can take place anywhere.
Yeah, we have a 20-acre minimum lot size on marginal land abutting the exclusive zones, but that could be accepted.
Yes.
Right up to the frontier.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Amendment number five. There's a section in the bill where it talks about, and I need to go through this just real briefly, divisions of land. This is under marginal land. Divisions of land to create a parcel or lot, and then it has in there not larger than the minimum size necessary for those uses authorized by subparagraph F of paragraph paren C of this subsection. By what that relates to is the non-residential uses such as churches, schools, and everything else. This would allow a church, instead of saying, yes, the church can only have 10 acres, it would allow that church, if the church wanted it, to have 30 acres. That's all that is. Or the school. To have more than the minimum lot size.
Good. Well, we've discussed that, Madam Chair.
Representative Tripp.
We had some discussion on that prior.
Yes.
And that's a good change.
Okay. Task force proposal amendment number six. Scratch it, because that really is taken care of when you open up marginal lands wide open in the lot of record. You don't have to worry about this language for...
That meets my definition.
Well, we redid the whole lot of record. You know, instead, currently in the bill under lot of record under marginal lands, it talks about Willamette Greenway, geological areas, floodplains, areas designated for urban industrial commercial development. By redoing it, which is in that other packet, you don't need amendment number six. Trust me. Skipping right from six to nine. What happened to seven, eight?
you're tired, your legs
Okay, on task force proposed amendment number 9. This relates to attorney's fees. It was agreed upon by the task force. It was promoted by the counties or proposed by the counties. When the four of us met, Representative Parkinson had real problems with this, and I would like Russ to, would you come up and explain this, and maybe Beth can help explain it, being an attorney, and I will take the...
You're an attorney.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, the previous discussion with Representative Troop regarding hardships, there are some farming communities where the hardship provision is even in Marion County in the past, either because of poor definition or abuses, the farmers have become aware that those mobile homes that were allowed have now fallen into non-farm use. They are not being used as they were originally intended to be. Some of the farmers have come to the counties and said, would you please, through your DA or county council, file suit and get those mobile homes removed or enforce your removal agreements or whatever tool you use to control them. Some of the counties are basically saying, hey, we're short of staff, we've got bigger issues to deal with, you go file action. The problem is the farmers are disinclined to do that because if they were to lose for any reason, they might be assigned expenses and costs relating to attorney fees and other kinds of things and end up not only not achieving their original objective but having to pay some costs. So the original bill included the first sentence or two in here which would allow the court to assign those expenses. It was modified to allow the expenses to go either way to the prevailing party rather than just to the plaintiff. And the only concern that we had was that the counties might get stuck with the assignment of the expenses if they were involved in the process. And as it turned out, Thousand Friends in Ag for Oregon indicated that they would be willing to go along with a modification that if the county was going to defend their actions, that they would then be liable for costs. But if the county was not defending its actions and it was strictly between the plaintiff and the defendant and the county not being involved, that then the landowner...
Representative Traer.
I think that's well explained. I have a question, however, which goes back to the sentence just above that, which says, however, if the prevailing party is the opponent to the hardship dwelling, the fees expenses must be assessed against the landowner. Now, why, when somebody's trying to take care of their grandfolks and put a mobile home on their property, and that's what the hardship's all about, and some guy down the street decides he's gonna appeal that, and he's wrong because he loses, the landowner, the guy that's trying to take care of those grandparents, still has to pay his attorney fees. I'll never understand. Would you explain it?
That's not what it says.
Well, the first sentence says the court may allow, so the court has the option or the discretion of deciding whether to allow it. It's not mandatory.
Then it says, however, if.
Well, Elizabeth, I'll leave it to Beth as to whether, or Elizabeth.
Chair Anderson, Elizabeth. Representative Trahern, Elizabeth Norman, Legislative Council. It still would only be the prevailing party who could get fees. If the landowner, as you were saying, was properly, that hardship was still proper, they would win, and they would not get fees against them. In fact, the court would have the option of assessing fees against the person who had taken them to court. The however, doesn't change that initial sentence about it being the prevailing party who gets the fees. And when I write that, I'll make that clear.
However, is there is because the only time fees might be assessed against the county is when the person disputing the hardship won.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Representative Traher.
I understand what they're trying to explain. I don't believe that's what this says, but I will accept it waiting for drafting.
Okay.
Yeah.
She explained it. She has to draft it.
And better draft it different.
Amendment number 10, fairly simple. It allows the same thing in EFU land as you allow in marginal lands, that there can be a temporary hardship mobile home in EFU.
Madam Chair.
Representative Parkinson.
What about in other uses? Is that allowed presently?
In other...
Well, here you said marginal lands and also EFU. What about rural residential or...
We never talked about that, Representative Parkinson.
Should be question.
That should be...
If you can have a hardship in EFU, you ought to be able to have a hardship in grazing or whatever, shouldn't you?
We never... frankly, I don't think this has ever even come up for discussion.
What?
Yeah.
That's my question.
Now, the task force... I will say, on all of these amendments that are before you, there isn't always total agreement, but there's been a lot of hours spent trying to come to some agreement on all of these. Russ?
Just briefly, Mr. Parkinson.
No, I need your name for the record.
Russ Nebon, Marion County Planning Director. We're dealing here with the EFU zones, and it's important to plug it in because it's not now mentioned. LCDC has had no problem allowing that kind of provision in other zones.
I see.
So we're only cleaning up a housekeeping problem here.
Gotcha.
Okay. Number 12. This, again, was currently in the bill. It's got 1,500 feet. This relates to notice requirements for an application of a non-farm dwelling in EFU. So you have to make that first very clear of what this pertains to. Secondly...
Madam Chair, 1,500 feet to 250 feet?
Madam Chair, Representative Troop is concerned you didn't go to 100.
One additional zero, I'd take 1,000.
Well, let me tell you what the task force compromise was, Representative Troop, before you get too nervous. Before you get too nervous, let me tell you.
You got a take on this one, too.
Oh, okay.
You got to give
an
entity.
I'll give it, so it better be a good take.
That you have, you delete the 1,500 feet, and you would have go down to 250 feet. But included in this would also be if a person or an organization or whatever wanted to have or wanted to be entitled to notice, they would pay a fee, and they would, which the county would set. The county would say, we'll send you all notifications in of non-farm dwellings in EFU zones, you know, if you pay it, so it doesn't cost us any money for administrative purposes. That's what the give and take was there.
And if you appear, you have standing.
And if you appear, you would have standing at the end.
That's good.
Task force of proposed amendment number 13. I need to look at the bill where we are. Right here. Sorry, Ben. Russ, you proposed this. Why don't you explain it? Probably make it more clear. And plus, people are tired of hearing me talk.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, in all EFU zones, there are standards for creating farm parcels for non-farm parcels for marginal lands. Whether you use partitioning or subdivision, all the parcels within that proposal has to meet the standards. There's been this concern about philosophically eliminating subdivisions in EFU zones, and so this wording has gotten into the bill. The wording presently would eliminate the possibility of one of those ranchers in Crook County who had 4,000 acres from subdividing it into four 1,000 acre parcels, because you would have outlawed his opportunity to do it in one action on a subdivision plat, and you would then force him instead to create two of those 1,000 acre parcels, and this is all assuming that it's approved by the county, and then come back a year later, because you can then repartition the next year, and you would force him to string it out and make it a more cumbersome process. There is nothing good or bad about whether you create it by partitioning or subdivision. It's whether or not the parcels meet the criteria. It's a tool that may be of an advantage to some property owners, and there's no real reason to eliminate it.
Everybody clear on that?
Yep.
Okay, thank you, Russ. Number 14, and again, Russ, why don't you just stay up here, since most of these were proposed by the counties.
This is
a substantial evidence test. This was by Alan, as a matter of fact. Alan, I need your name for the record.
Alan Bachman, Washington County Council's Office. And we proposed this so there'd be a standard review that was clear, and it wouldn't have to be something the courts would have to figure out what the standard review is. Rather, it would come from the legislature. And this was taken basically from the standard review that applies to exceptions, that's in the governor's proposals for exceptions, which I believe has just been incorporated into 2295.
That's correct.
And I figured if the standard is good enough for an exception to the goals, then it should be good enough for determining marginal land. And so there'll be some consistency there.
Anyone need any explanation on that?
Thank you.
Thank you, Alan.
Van Leeuwen.
Representative Van Leeuwen. Is the next amendment that I don't know if the task force looked at, but the members, four of your committee members looked at it and agreed with it.
And Madam Chair.
Representative Van Leeuwen.
Basically, this is the right to farm bill, and I just have one other idea I would like to throw out. I've discussed it with several of the others, but in the areas that we're allowed to be built on, in whatever it is, it might possibly, at least sometime down the road or now, we might consider putting something in there that would require siting on a certain part of that lot where we're on the edge of, if this were on the edge of the resource land, the farmer forestry land, asking them to site their dwelling not right here on the corner next to the resource land, but in away from there, so that they're happier and the resource land people are happier, whether they are slash burning or field burning or spraying or whatever they're doing. If it were sited away from the perimeter, then there would be less conflict.
Okay.
Less need for this.
Madam Chair,
I mean, that's just an idea. I don't know whether, if any of the rest of you are interested, we'll put it into a proposal.
Representative Parkinson.
A question to Representative Van Leeuwen.
Representative Van Leeuwen, Representative Parkinson has a question for you.
Excuse me.
Is a covenant not to complain, now what would you do with it? Would it be all written? Would you file it with the county clerk or county recorder, or would it follow the deed, or what would you do with it?
Madam Chairman, as I understand, and Representative Parkinson, as I understand it, this is being done in my county now, and maybe in some of the other counties when they allow non-farm uses in a farm use zone. Mr. Nippon, can you explain?
Mm-hmm. There is a, Russ Nippon, Marion County Planning Director. There is a process whereby in your approving of a non-farm dwelling, you require that the person receiving approval for that dwelling sign what we call in Marion County a declaratory statement. And the wording has been kind of passed around amongst the various counties. I don't think everybody uses it, but it basically meets the intent of what you're talking about here. When we get that signature, we then go and record it in county records, and it becomes a deed notation. I don't know if the word covenant and deed restriction really describes the legal status of it. We have never had one tested in court, but the property owner basically signs off on the issue of complaining. And as with the right to farming bill, it's kind of hard to tell somebody that under no circumstances they have the right to complain. But it creates a moral imperative on that person, recognizing at the outset that they're going out there and that they have to recognize that. And we are doing it now. I think under the conditional use permit procedure, you can not only require it locally, but you can also require setbacks and siting standards. So I'm not sure that this is necessary to allow us to do it, but it highlights the need to do it.
Representative Hill.
Would this have any basis in law? Could someone bring a small claims court suit or civil action suit on the basis of this? This covenant or...
No, I think that if somebody who had signed one of these or their heirs and assigns were to file a nuisance suit against the farmer, that in effect this would give the farmer one additional tool besides the right to farm bill to basically present to the court evidence that these people were aware of accepted farming practices, and then he could show that what he did was accepted farming practices. And I think the court would give it some weight in conjunction with the other rights that that farmer has, but I don't think it would be conclusive on its own. We haven't had a court test, but it does create a bias in the favor of the farmer.
Is there anything in these... One more question.
Representative Hill and then Representative Amlin.
Is there anything in these agreements that would protect the farmer from damages, such as dogs or kids with BB guns? There's nothing in there. They'd have to go through criminal court to get relief for that?
Well, the wording addresses the fact that the activities on the parcel should not create or increase management costs for the farmer. Mm-hmm. So it addresses the issue, but it doesn't provide any new mechanism or any way for him to get relief in that area.
Representative Van Leeuwen.
A question to Ron Eber, I think. Beth just gave to me something that you had put together for me. Does this deal with the subject? I really haven't had time to read it.
Not directly.
Not directly.
Ron Eber, Department of Land Conservation and Development. That cuts at it from another angle, Representative Van Leeuwen. Presently in the exclusive farm use statute under 215-253, there is a restriction against state agencies and local government from restricting accepted farming practices within an exclusive farm use zone as long as the impacts of that accepted farming practice remains within the zone. As soon as it goes outside the zone, then those people can go to the county governing body and get restrictive regulations against the farmer. The intent of the language before you is to expand that somewhat, that so the restriction of the county regulating accepted farming practices would expand not only within EFU, but to marginal land areas that would be designated. And further, if the impacts now go beyond EFU or marginal lands, or to rural residential areas, essentially everything outside an urban growth boundary, it really doesn't matter how far the impacts except up to an urban growth boundary, those accepted farming practices go, the county could not regulate them within a marginal lands or exclusive farm use zone area. So it is an additional amount of protection to the farmer, because as it stands now, people in rural residential areas could go to the county governing body and get restrictions if they were didn't like the smells from the neighboring farmer.
Representative Anderson.
Well, I'd rather have her quick.
Representative,
I'm going to have to make a motion.
I would like to move that this be added to Amendment Number 15.
Is there any problem with that?
No, given.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move Task Force Proposal Number 1 through 15 to be drafted.
What happened to the remember the other?
There are a couple missing. But
what happened to the last one?
2 through 12.
Not including 7 and 8, which are missing.
What, page 13?
About page 13,
no.
What?
No.
Representative Anderson, Beth is sitting over here saying, you know, let Elizabeth at least deal with the rest of this packet, and Elizabeth can get busy on drafting if we just would do that.
Well, I don't like any page 13.
Well, let's look at it.
That would be something good in it. Maybe it doesn't matter.
I don't like those nasty golf courses.
On page 13, let me just quickly tell you what they are. On page, whether you like that section or not, what page 4, line 25 is, by deleting farm unit or woodlot and inserting lot or parcels, you clean up a fairly large loophole. And the same with, which was recommended by the state forester, on line 25, you clean up a fairly large loophole there. They're technical to the extent that, you may or may not like those sections, but the amendments really do close loopholes. Now, obviously, the golf course is not a loophole. The four members of your committee that looked at this, we did not come to any agreement. There was talk, and we sort of went back and forth and never came to any conclusion that golf courses would be in, which they're currently in the bill.